Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, March the 5th. And as we like to do on Sunday nights, we'll be chatting with our good friend from South Texas, our friend George Rodriguez. George, welcome. Is the weather as beautiful in South Texas as it is up here?
It's spectacular.
Absolutely
spectacular.
Yeah, it must be spring, or we're getting close to spring, because the weather here in North Texas is absolutely spectacular. I wanted to mention very quickly before we get into our topics, and we've got some good ones tonight to get into, but just a little bit of on this day in history, 1946. Winston Churchill, who had just been defeated for prime minister in the UK, came to the United States and he spoke at a college. He didn't come as the prime minister to speak before Congress, but he spoke at a college. And he delivered one of his most famous speeches, and one that became a rallying cry for the West. And that's what he called the Iron Curtain speech, where he was talking about what was happening in the Soviet bloc and all of these countries that had just been overtaken by the Soviet Union after the war. And, you know, the threat of Soviet communism and expansionism. So just a quick reminder. 70, that would make it 77 years ago that he delivered that speech. But it's amazing how, if you read the speech, and I have it in my blog, apart from the speech, it's interesting how if you read that speech, he's talking about projecting weakness, how it's extremely important to project strength. Because he says in the speech, the Soviets understand strength. They do not understand weakness. So things have not changed much, George, have they?
Not at all. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, whether it's a dictator or a bully, whether it's on an international level or on a very personal level, unless you project strength, that bully or that dictator are going to try to take advantage of you. And that's all there is to it. And I mean, that is a fact of life. That is like getting wet in the rain.
Right.
That's like having a heat stroke in the desert. Right. That is a fact of life. However, unfortunately, a lot of liberals, a lot of people who just don't understand reality, don't believe that. And consequently, look where we're at right now.
Right. And that's the whole point, that if you read the speech, if you read the text of the speech, it is remarkable. It is remarkable how the language applies to the current world.
Correct.
70, however many years. I'm missing my math a little bit. I think it's 77, 1946. Yeah, that would make it 77. Okay, well, let's get into our topic. We got four topics we want to touch on tonight. Very interesting situation happening with Canada. Canada is now saying we can't take any more people from New York. What's been happening here lately, the bus goes from Texas to New York. And many are going from New York to Canada. And Canada says, we can't take these anymore. Stop it. Interesting situation. Second, I want to talk about Governor Abbott. There's going to be a primary here in a year, a Texas primary. He's not officially running, but you never know. It could happen. Then I want to get into Austin, Texas, because that's the real problem right now for the state of Texas. And then school choice, the latest on that. So let's talk about the situation with the northern border up in Canada. The Dallas Morning News had a very interesting editorial basically saying to the Canadians, hey, you know, this is what happens when you open your border. But, George, it is amazing to me, you know, when those buses started going up to New York and other places, Who would have thought that this would be the consequence, that New York City is now paying $5 million a day? That's how much it's costing them to take care of these people. And they started sending them to Canada, and Canada is saying, no, thank you. We can't take them either. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, the bus that started out in Texas has now really become a very effective way of explaining the problem that we had here in Texas, George.
It is. Again, this is liberals thinking that, you know, life is it pertains only to their philosophy. These are liberals who said, you know, let's open the border and America can take care of everything because, well, we're America. And then the minute that the reality of these migrants started reaching their communities, they started changing their tune. I mean, you've got the mayor of Washington, D.C. You've got the mayor of New York, obviously. You've got various other mayors, like in Denver and in other places, in Chicago, who immediately started changing their tune. Well, you've got Canada, which has been led by one of the most liberal prime ministers in its history. And, you know, they've been welcoming in their shores. They have a very, very open policy. However, it has never hit home until now when the United States started using a pipeline from our southern border to theirs. I interviewed a Border Patrol agent on my show this past week who works on the Canadian border. And in spite of the fact that it's that they've got 5 inches of snow, can you imagine, in New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, they've got traffic of people landing in Canada and then walking across the border to the United States. And then they pack them and send them back to Canada, and Canada just is freaking out. So, you know, the fact that they built themselves, the Canadians built themselves this this process where anybody can come in, is now they're changing their tune, just like all of these other liberal mayors who were so open to sanctuary communities.
That's right. And I think in the case of Canada, specifically under Prime Minister Trudeau, who's the man you're talking about, who's about as woke can be. I mean, this guy is the definition of woke.
Yes.
Is the Prime Minister of Canada. He's starting to catch the heat. Part of the problem is that, you know, Canada has always had, and you know this quite well, Canada has always been very picky about the people it accepts. They've always had a very high standard. Like if you go to, let's say, to the Canadian consulate here in Dallas or wherever, and you say, I want to move to Canada, the first thing they're going to ask you is, okay, well, that's nice of you, but what can you do for us? In other words, what they're looking for is immigrants who can complement their economy, an immigrant who's going to bring something to their country that they do not have. But this idea that they just take anybody has historically not been a Canadian way.
You're right.
And I think under
Trudeau came along.
Yeah. Under Trudeau, what happened was Trudeau wanted to be cute. Trudeau wanted to, you know, he wanted to be popular at the UN. Well, maybe he's popular at the UN, but he's not very popular in Canada right now. I'll tell you that, right? He is in deep trouble.
And somebody needs to remind him that, you know, he does represent and lead Canada.
Right. Yeah, and in Canada, as I say, the other thing, too, the article was saying that the article that came out, I posted about this at the American Thinker, by the way, but the article that came out said that the word has gone around the world that Canada has very generous benefits.
Gee,
which they
who
do.
Would have thought?
Yeah, and, yeah. Who would have thought that, right? And Canada has very generous social benefits, which they do. And so, anyway, that's kind of a magnet. People want to live in Canada. That's great. You know, no problem. We all love Canada. It's a beautiful country. They have great hockey players. I'll put that out there. That's not a shock. They have great hockey players. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that what started out in, you know, what started out as a bus from El Paso to Manhattan and then to Quebec or Ontario, wherever they went, all of a sudden, this little bus
freaked out.
has people freaking out. The mayor of New York and the leaders of Canada. But George, here's a figure that I thought was amazing. $5 million a day
in New York.
What New York City is spending to take care of these people. That is a lot of money. You know, over what? $5 million a day?
And that is the amount of money, Silvio. That is the amount of money that the city of New York is willing to admit to. Because we know from, just understanding what a person, how a person lives in a community, in a city, that the figure is probably larger than that, because there are many untold resources that you don't, that you don't count, that you do use up. I mean, how much water do you use up on the tap every time you shower, every time you drink some water? How much, or flush it? How much trash do you create?
Right.
There are many, many things, and we're seeing this all over the country. We're seeing that we saw it in El Paso. The city of El Paso has refused to show the figure of just the 2 days that they cleaned up the homeless encampment when Biden came to visit. They refused, for whatever reason, to share how much money they expended to clean up. And it was, I mean, that was a substantial cleanup that they did, because it was so, it covered something like four or five blocks. And people are coming into our communities, and, you know, law enforcement is impacted, health benefits. You're seeing in Yuma how people have swallowed up the public hospitals there, and the public clinics are not able to provide dialysis to their own citizens right now, because so many of these migrants across the border are in dire need of some type of dialysis when they get here.
Right.
And it is, this is a situation that, I call it the second phase of the border crisis. This is the underlying factor that we are paying for, man. And it's not good. It's not good.
Right. No, I think you're right, because the $5 million, for example, another expense is that if you have children, you got to put them in schools.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's an expense. You're talking about law enforcement. That's correct. You know, you got more police you got to use. But the situation in Yuma, Arizona, that hospital, I was listening to an interview today, and they are literally, as you indicated, having to turn away people who are in those communities because machines and all their rooms or whatever are full of these people.
Let me interrupt you real quick.
Sure,
The tragedy here, the real situation that Americans need to get angry about, is that all of these are public funds. All of these are public programs that they are taking, that they are utilizing, and the folks that have just crossed the border, they've never paid into the system. Now, granted that most migrants that come, or immigrants that have come into the United States, come and are in the same boat. The vast majority of immigrants that have come into the United States prior to this time, particularly in this quantity, have always worked and put into the system.
Right. And that's an excellent point that you bring up, George, because I mentioned this in my American Thinker post, and I used the example of the Cubans, like my family.
Yeah.
And the Vietnamese who came in the 70s.
Yes.
We came in. Now, this was my father I'm talking about, my father and mother. But my father came in, and within 2 weeks, he was working.
Yeah.
We were self-sustaining immediately. I mean, we did get some help. I'm not denying that. But we got some help from some charities, from churches. But we got here in the first week of September. Maybe we couldn't pay that first monthly rent in October, but we were able to pay it in November. And when my mom and dad were shopping in October and November, they were using the funds they were working for. And that is, I think, the biggest fallacy of what we're seeing with these people coming in. They're coming in, and these people are going to have to rely on some kind of charity because they cannot work. They're going to have to rely on some kind of public service, and or in many cases, unfortunately, they're going to have to go into the underground economy and work without paper. And that creates other problems, too. That so anyway, but I'll say one last thing about this topic, George. It is amazing what's happened when these buses started going. I mean, Governor Abbott was 100% correct.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the tactic has worked out exactly as he called it.
Exactly. And you know, a lot of people criticized him for that, that you're just spreading the problem. Well, yeah, that's the whole idea, is that you created the problem. All right, share it with us.
Right. No, no, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant move that he was called inhumane and all of that, but it turned out to be politically, and not just politically, from the standpoint of policy, it turned out to be a brilliant move. Well, speaking of Governor Abbott, George, let's speculate a little bit. The Texas primary is going to be exactly a year from March. It usually happens in March. So March 24, there's going to be a primary in Texas. Now, a lot of it is going to be for state offices, but, you know, you may have a presidential primary. And I'm speculating right now, but, you know, you get into a situation next March where maybe, you know, Abbott Trump and DeSantis are not moving the ball forward, and Abbott says, I'm getting in. He wins the Texas primary. All of a sudden, he's got an untold number of delegates. He could literally get in the in first place by winning Texas, George.
Yeah, you know, the straw polls that have come out, like for CPAC that just took place in Virginia, the conservative PAC convention that took place, the governor came in something like seventh or eighth with 2%. Of popularity. The fact that he even registered surprised a lot of people. But, you know, it's going to be very, very interesting because I do see Texas continues to be very, very strong Trump country.
Yes. Yeah.
It's going to be very, very, I mean, even if with the popularity that the governor has, it's going to be very, very difficult. The other thing is that we have to remember the biblical comment that a prophet is not one in his own house. So there's a lot of resistance already. The minute that you mention Abbott for president, a lot of Texans recoil at that. That, you know, well, he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that.
Right. No, I mean, it's a long shot. And
yeah,
I want to make sure that everybody realizes that it's a long shot.
He is in there. And I think that that says a lot.
I'm simply saying you're right. I mean, he doesn't come up very high in these polls, and I'm speculating, and it's a long shot. All I'm simply saying is if you win the Texas primary, whoever you are, you have a lot of cards in your hand. So I'm just bringing it up. By the way, our viewer, I am, says he still owes you some tacos. So
I'm ready.
Yeah, well, you're ready whenever. So. I am. George is hungry anytime you're ready. So let's move on. All right. Let's move on to a very, very important topic, and that is what's happening in Austin, Texas. For the viewers or people outside of Texas who may not know, Austin, Texas is a bit chaotic here lately. One of the most beautiful cities in Texas, one of the most beautiful places, you know, the hill country and all that stuff. I mean, just an absolutely beautiful city.
Fastest growing city in the state.
Yes, but unfortunately, it's been taken over by the woke. Put it that way.
Very
liberal city. Anyway, so it's been very chaotic. They've had a crime problem. Some police are quitting. So the question, George, for the day is, you know, what does the governor do? I mean, he obviously has a responsibility to make sure that the capital of the state, I mean, we're not just talking about any city, it's the capital of the state, has some semblance of law and order. And right now, it is a mess down there.
It is.
The films or the videos that we see. So I assume that he's got some emergency powers, George. What could he do?
Well, let's recall that a couple of years ago, the homeless situation got really out of control, and there was even some murders that were committed by homeless folks. He stepped out and pushed the city, threatened to take money away from them, threatened to use. In fact, I do believe that he did use the state police to clear some areas and to do some investigations. And it did help a little bit. It did help a little bit. And the situation that we've got in Austin right now is clearly that there are people in power who are anti-police. These are the anti-police, defund the police folks. And what they've done is they've created a situation where the police have been handcuffed, where they have made life so difficult that tons of police officers who have, reached the 20-year mark have just retired and just gotten out of there. You have many others who were just recruited who, after a year, 2 or 3 years, they've said, no, this is not for us, and they've left. So you've got a smaller, I think that they're in need of something like 500 police officers at this point. So that whole atmosphere has lent itself, plus the fact that a police officer has got to be super careful on what they do, because they can be accused of this or that, and then be fired, be reprimanded, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't want that on their personnel file, of course. So they've created a very awful situation for police officers. And on top of that, you've got this district attorney who is very, very tolerant, who is very, very ascending and has excused a lot of crime, has raised the threshold for punishing of the crime. And it is out of control. I mean, the most recent situation we're talking about is street takeovers people are racing up and down the streets. And then the police came in to try to break up their party, and they turned on the police. And in fact, a couple of the police were reprimanded for being too rough with some of these people that were being confrontational. It's a bad situation. It is a very, very bad situation. And in my opinion, there is a lot of concern by CLEAT. CLEAT is the law enforcement organization, the statewide law enforcement organization that lobbies in Austin. CLEAT is very, very concerned because the atmosphere, the political ideology of anti-policing and controlling, limiting their power has been spreading. And in fact, here in San Antonio, there is an amendment to the city charter that would do the very, very same thing of raise the threshold of punishment and limit the police. And I mean, this is not a good situation for any community.
No, none at all. So I do think the governor is going to have to act. Maybe
I do too.
Maybe in a worst case scenario, send in the National Guard and at least protect parts of the city. But this is, after all, the capital city of Texas. So, you know, you have to have, at least some tranquility.
I think, Silvio, what eventually is going to happen is, just as the governor, and I'm not saying that the governor is going to do it, but somebody's going to do it, that just like the governor eventually sent buses of migrants up to the sanctuary communities, and they're now freaking out, same thing is going to happen with these communities that are so liberal, is there's going to have to be a backing off of police officers and let them suffer the consequences.
Right. Well, the governor said also that they would lose some tax money or some funds.
Yes.
If they didn't live up to, or if they weren't funding the police properly. So that's another card that he can play. But,
I don't know if you heard. I don't know if you heard this past week.
Yeah.
Rosie Castro, the mother of the two Castro twins, was appointed for a temporary position to the city council here in San Antonio, and she is about as woke and anti-police as you can get.
No, I didn't know that, but I know one of her sons, either the congressman or the other one, is apparently in the hospital, right? He went in the hospital, so you know, we wish him well. But speaking of takeover, you could also have the takeover of the Houston Independent School District has been a mess. So, you know, the governor is going to have
heavily run by liberals.
Exactly. So one thing we can say about liberals, they're not very good at getting things done correctly.
Managing things.
Yeah, they're good at creating problems, not very good
solving,
at managing them. Well, our last topic today is school choice. The governor seems very committed to it. What I get up here, the news is that the governor is very committed to it. I think it's a big deal for him. Do you believe that they will still do that in the state legislature in this particular session?
From what I am seeing, there is, I mean, it's in the wind. It's very, very, and it's gathering strength. I think that some form of school choice is going to happen. You see more and more pushback against the National Association of Teachers, National Association of Educators. You see more and more stories of like the Houston School District. Here in San Antonio, there's another school district on the south side of town that is in terrible shape. And I think one of the big problems that continues to happen is that every time they talk about one of these troubled school districts, two things. First of all, the first thing that they are demanding in defense of these school districts is more money. Well, how much money does it take to educate a kid, particularly, you know, in a school district that's not doing its job? The second thing that there's always the defense of is, you know, they push forward, well, the teachers need this. And at the same time, there is so much money that is given to the education industry. That's what I'll call it. And it doesn't seem to trickle down to the school, to the teachers.
No.
It just doesn't seem to trickle down to the teachers. So,
well, it's very top heavy. I mean, I think that's the problem. It's a top heavy situation where a lot of the money is up at the top. And it doesn't, I mean, I have no problem with paying teachers more money. I think people...
If it gets to the teacher.
But I think there's kind of a top-heavy situation. I think in the long run that the school choice will happen because
yes,
the parents are going to win this thing.
Yeah.
I think the parents are, and the parents want school choice because they want the best, you know, the best education
exactly
for their kids.
Exactly.
And they're not finding that, unfortunately, in many of the school districts. But there may be some of the school districts in the outlying areas that will maintain their public schools because there's nowhere else for the parents to send their kids. But a lot of those schools, you know, they seem to be doing okay because they're more conservative parts of town where maybe the school board is better run than some of the cities.
I think one of the things, Silvio, that needs to be addressed in school problems, and it's not. Everything is always focusing on the school itself. But one of the things that eventually needs to happen is the situation where they need to focus on the culture at home. Because a lot of it is also the situation where the parents or parent is not involved in disciplining or involved with the child's education at home. So therefore, the child is a discipline problem at the school. I think eventually that's going to have to come out because so many of the problems that we've got in schools or that teachers will tell you about is just the fact that they have a hard time in teaching because of disruptive students.
Right. And that's why I think that's what's driving school choice, that a lot of parents want to put their kids in a safe place, in a more disciplined environment. And unfortunately, they're not finding that in many of the public schools. So I guess it would have to be a law passed by the state legislature and then signed by the governor. But what I hear from Governor Abbott is that he's all in. So
yeah.
I think he's going to sign one way or another. He's going to sign something.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah, this summer, because I do think. Now, there was a poll that came out in the Dallas Morning News in a school choice story. There was a poll that came out, and support for school choice was like 46 in favor, 41 against it. So it you know.
But see, any poll that's done by a large liberal newspaper like the Dallas Morning News, I am very suspicious of.
Right.
But even
mean,
with that kind of figures, I think it still tells you that people that people are very, very ready to accept school choice.
Well, if you're at 46% in favor of school choice, if let's assume that number is correct. I mean, that's almost half.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming most of that is coming from suburban parents and some of the, you know, some of the outlying areas. But I just think a lot of parents are concerned. Yeah. I think a lot of parents, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Or did you lose me?
No, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay.
Lost you for
no, I think a lot of parents, and again, I don't have kids at that age anymore. Our grandchildren will be going to these schools, I guess, in 5 years or so. But I can tell you that I always felt that discipline was essential in an educational environment. And that's not happening right now in many of these public schools. There's a total breakdown in discipline, and the teachers cannot do their job. The administrators are frustrated. And, you know, now a lot of the fault is with the parents, as you indicated. A lot of the fault is with the parents.
Yeah, I mean, eventually that's another phase of the school choice that's going to have to take place.
Absolutely. Yeah, the parents have to do their part. This is, you know, they can't just dump these kids in school and hope that the school does the job of the parents. They have to do their job. Well, give me a quick review of where you're traveling or where you're going here in the next week or so.
Well, I will be in the Houston area in a couple of weeks to go give a talk, to give a presentation. And mostly I am here in the border region. I'm going to be heading to Laredo on Wednesday to see what's going on, as well as I will be at the end of the week, I'll be back in Del Rio just to go watch or report on what's going on in Del Rio.
Right.
The second phase of the border crisis coming to a community near you real quick.
Right. Well, just ask the mayor of New York.
Ask
the mayor of New York.
And Trudeau.
Yeah, he knows. And Trudeau, yeah, up in Canada. He knows exactly what you're talking about. But there was one incident. You mentioned the border. There was apparently a female border patrol agent who was attacked today. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. The aggression, and the amount of danger has grown exponentially on the border. A lot more aliens are becoming a lot more aggressive when they get arrested, mostly because they know there's nothing going to happen to them. They're not going to get deported. They're going to get detained. They are going to be given a citation and then released into the community. This is a story that people need to hear about a lot, because a lot of these folks, you know, these migrants are now feeling very, very entitled. Not to mention that they feel very, very unafraid of our laws.
Right.
That's not a good situation.
No, not at all. Not at all. George, thank you again for joining us, and keep up the great work down on the border. Keep us posted on what's going on. And I am is still looking to eat some tacos with you. So I hope you two
I'm ready.
can somehow connect. We always invite our viewers, if you want to take any one of us out to tacos, we are more than willing to accept your invitation. But I'm picky on what tacos to eat. So if I can say that. Have a great day, George, and thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work that you do.
Thank you very much.
All right. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. We talked a little bit today about what's happening, of course, on the border, what's happening with school choice. I still see school choice happening in Texas, as is already happening in many of the so-called red states. And, of course, the situation in Austin, Texas, where you've had a breakdown in law and order. And I believe the governor has already taken some steps, but he may have to go even further than that. You cannot have capital. You cannot have the capital of the state of Texas, Austin, the beautiful city of Austin, Texas, overrun by these irresponsible people causing all kinds of problems. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.